Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tuesday night, another Tuesday night, and that means it's time for the Burn 'Em Down podcast. This is the official podcast of the Rolling Thunder Racing Series, and we're going to talk about this week's race. We got two guest drivers tonight we'll be talking to, then we'll be talking about last week's race at Richmond, and also what's going to be going on this weekend, and trying to get some strategies out of the two guest drivers I have tonight so then I can sell their secrets, haha, but that ain't going to happen. And this is the Burn 'Em Down podcast, produced by the Sim Racing Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Dreis. Pretty competitive league, week five races, five different winners. So let's get to our guest tonight, the Burn 'Em Down Podcast Driver Spotlight. We have Seth Reed. He finished P3 at Richmond. He drives the car number 51. And Bo Tiffany, who finished in sixth place last night, and he drives car number 35 in the Rolling Thunder Racing Series Gen 4 cars. Gentlemen, good evening. How you doing?
Hey, good evening. Hey. How are you doing?
How's it going, Greg?
Doing all right. It was 75 degrees up here a couple days ago, and today it's 49, so getting used to the cold weather. Shutting down the lawn mowing and landscaping business for the season, so going to be that couch potato and drive my wife crazy all winter long since I have nothing to do but race and do podcasts. So, Seth, whereabouts are you from?
I'm from Ohio, so I'm from a small town called Zanesville, which is like an hour east of Columbus, and now I live in Columbus and live, sleep, and breathe Ohio State football. So.
Oh, okay. I've got family in Canton, Ohio.
Who's in Canton? Sorry.
Family in Canton. I've probably got seven or eight cousins and a few of their kids and their kids in the Columbus area. Went out many times to the Football Hall of Fame game, and as we were talking about hangovers earlier, I was back in my 20s in those days, and barely made it to the induction ceremonies without a lot of aspirin and hair of the dog. And then you mentioned Zanesville. Is there still a pottery company there called Zanesville Pottery? Are you aware of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're right off, I think, 70 right there. Zanesville is actually well known for their clay in the soil.
Ah, so, yep.
We're a big pottery industry in Zanesville.
Interesting, because my career before I started my lawn and garden business, I was a lawn and garden buyer for one of the biggest garden centers on the East Coast with four stores, and we bought pottery from Zanesville. So when you said Zanesville, I'm like, I know that area.
Oh, heck yeah! Usually people know, so I have to like put a geographical map in their head where Columbus is.
Yep.
So even for people in Columbus.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of impressive. That's pretty cool.
Cool. And Bo, where are you from?
So originally, I grew up in Corning, New York, which for most people that know where Watkins Glen International is, about 10 minutes from there. And I've been in North Carolina now for 20 years.
Oh, whereabouts in North Carolina?
So I'm in a little small town called Graham, which is about halfway between the Raleigh-Durham area and Greensboro. So
okay.
I'm home to where a lot of the small racetracks started, not too far away from Caraway and all those little places.
Ah, cool. I know the Raleigh area, only driving through it on the way to Augusta, Georgia area where my mother grew up, and she had 10 brothers and sisters down there. So whenever I see my cousin's kids having kids, I say, can you stamp a number on their head so I know which number cousin it is? Because my father had 16 brothers and sisters, and my mother had 10. So I think we're up to about, between on both sides, to about 800 or 900 cousins. So it's a little difficult keeping track of them.
Wow, that's crazy. We should send out Christmas presents to each one of them every year.
I'll tell you what, I'll be an anonymous cousin and only send a receiving address and not be able to ship anything. I'll come out of the head that way. So
I'm in the same boat with my family right there.
Oh, wow. So, Seth, Richmond, you qualified second, correct?
No, I qualified sixth. Should have qualified up closer, but I messed up my qualifying run.
Ah, okay.
All things that you messed up is the things you remember the most. So
yeah. So what was your when you went into the qualifying? Where do you normally qualify in the pack? Up front.
I try to keep it. I've gone for the pull every single week. I try to at least be top five because qualifying can dictate the rest of your race. I've been in leagues before where I qualify mid pack and mess up, and within a couple laps, I already have damage from say a wreck happening. Someone doesn't check up, and it's just you kind of control your own destiny more so when you start up front. At least you reduce the risks.
Exactly.
Getting damage.
Oh, that's right. It was Dylan Jones that qualified P2. So that's where he got that from. So on a small track like Richmond, do you think where you qualify is even a bigger factor than a super speedway or a road course?
I mean, every place has their own specialty on why you need to qualify up front.
Yeah.
Richmond, it's historically been hard to pass at because it's kind of trends into a bottom feeder track, and I mean the groove opened up a little bit.
Yeah,
but typically it's once you get a couple laps on your tires, you're pretty much stuck where you're at. Like I was running qualifying laps just to stay in fourth, and it took me I think 10 laps to finally get past Scott Crump there. So
yeah.
It's just hard to pass there, so I was disappointed in my sixth place qualifying effort.
Uh-huh.
But made up for it, I guess.
Yeah, because like you said, it's a tough track, and I don't do well there. That's not one of my favorite tracks. I like short tracks, but it's like road racing. I love road racing, but not very good at it. Bo, you finished in P6. How did you qualify?
Second to last. So treacherous turn four. Got to the throttle a little bit too quick, trying to gain speed coming to my second lap and come up off the corner. And it's funny because the announcers on the broadcast are talking about everybody getting free off the four. And I am the one that showed them how to do it the wrong way, I guess. And just as I caught it and tried to save it and slid it, I literally stopped on the start-finish line and it started clocking my second lap.
Oh, no.
So I didn't get a time, so I started 22nd out of 23rd.
Well, you shouldn't feel too bad because somebody actually did worse than you. Which is hard to do. Which is hard to do if you stop on the start-finish line after lap one.
I just kind of slid it there. It was kind of funny because I went back and was listening to some of the broadcasts and they showed it.
So, not the way you want to get your name on a broadcast, right?
No, not at all.
But they saw your sponsor more often than they would have otherwise. So
yeah, which makes my son happy.
So starting from that far, starting from
teach your son what not to do.
There you go.
Yeah.
So starting from that far back, how long did it take you to get up front? And when you felt comfortable that you're going to be in the top 10?
A long time. So the first segment of the race, I messed up. Like Seth said, it's very hard to pass.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trying to go to the bottom and get underneath somebody and not wear out your stuff. And the first green flag run, I was just way too conservative. Ended up getting lapped. We were coming to the first pit cycle. I mean, I was 20th, 21st there the whole first run.
Wow.
Coming green flag pit stops, looked at my tire wear, and I was so conservative. I think I was still almost 80% on my right front. I just didn't hardly use enough tire, but just walked. So picked up the pace from there and just looked for the long runs. Got lucky to get a couple cautions, got back on the lead lap. And then a couple of the cautions there, the leaders pitted, and I stayed out. I think I ran almost 100 laps on my second set of tires.
Oh, wow.
And I came in the second to last caution, I think, put my second set of tires on that we were allotted for the race. Came back in, coming to the one to go because I was the last car in the lead lap. And topped it off with fuel. And then just was conservative enough saving. I was able to, you know, just kind of work my way through people. And as everybody had to pit, just kept going, staying consistent. So I had enough tires if we had our green light checkered or anything. And I still had extra set in the pits when the race was over.
Wow, that so saving the strategy kind of was an indicator of what you needed to do, and just bided your time and waited for cautions or leaders to pit in front of you then, sounds like.
Yeah, and I didn't run the bottom. I ran the kind of like the half groove up kind of the edge of the first lane, and I did some practice there earlier in the night, did a real long fuel run just to kind of see what tire wear was going to be. So I had an idea if I could just stay consistent and be a little conservative, it could make the tires last longer and be a little faster at the end of the run.
Definitely sounds like it worked out from starting at P22. Seth, what was your race strategy on pit stops and tires and fuel conservation? How did you manage that?
Pretty much, I just split it in thirds, and the cautions fell perfectly to do that. If a caution would have flowed in that last run, I would have been a sitting duck because I didn't have any tires left, but I wasn't expecting all those different strategies coming out. Some leaders are pitting after 10 laps on their tires. And
wow.
It's the tire strategy is actually really interesting, and it brings the field together in a competitive sense. Because you can't just go out there and dominate and lead every lap. There's a lot of comers and goers with the different strategies. And pretty much if you play your cards right with where the cautions fall, and luckily the last 2 weeks it's played perfectly into my hands. But it is fun. It's a new dynamic that I haven't had to deal with before. Usually we have like an extra set or two of tires. So you run for 50 laps or 40 laps, you're coming in and changing them out. So it definitely adds a new, an extra element that people are still trying to figure out and understand it. And we're still learning each other's driving habits. So trying to predict when cautions will happen or whatnot. Yep. But I felt like after all those, five cautions in a row, that I just had a feeling it was going to go green. So I risked it and didn't realize the fuel was going to be that close. I didn't do math well in my head. but conserved once it got out front and made some rookie mistakes. I'm still adapting to this car and there's some things that are different than Xfinity. I've been running Xfinity cars for the past couple of years, so there's some similarities, but definitely some differences that I keep making mistakes. So every mistake is a lesson learned. So
that it is. Bo, I know that there hasn't been many cautions in the prior four races, and from just reading the race notes, there was I think this race had more cautions than the previous races. Knowing that you've had four pretty clean races, was that the expectation last night going in? And once you started seeing those cautions, did that have any impact on changing your strategy?
Not really. I kind of agree with Seth on it. I mean, we have an amazing league, an amazing group of guys for how new this car is, the iRacing, the limited time people have had to really learn it.
Yeah.
And how much faster it is, harder to drive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it takes a little bit of skill, and we have a really good group of people that just have a good skill. Everybody seems to race together. I mean, traditionally, Richmond on iRacing is a wreck fest.
Yeah.
And, you know, Seth could probably tell you, we've raced together in other leagues, and, like, we can't make it five laps without having to go, just high pace.
Yeah, high pace, yep.
I mean, there was a couple little cautions, but it's not like it wrecked the whole field. You know,
right.
It was a couple of things. Guys apologized. They talked to each other.
Yep.
I mean, you know, for the most part, it was simple things that probably any one of us could have made the same mistake.
Oh, sure.
Somebody just get too free off the corner.
Yep.
You know, I apologized to the 11. I got into the back of him just because I was a little bit faster than him on older tires. And he slowed up too much on corner entry, and I was already committed, you know. So just like little mistakes, you know, like that. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, I really think this league is going to be, as we go, less and less cautions.
Yeah.
Hey, Bo, don't lie. You wanted another caution to come out. So you can put those new fleshies on.
Uh-huh. No, because then I went out of UL and I would put it back. I was in seventh then. I would have ended up like, because at that point there was 19 cars on the lead lap. I would have restarted 19th.
Oh, you would have been back up there with everyone else on old tires.
So, Seth, same question. Did the abnormal number of yellows last night versus the first four races have any impact on your strategy?
No, not with how they fell. Like I said, I was just trying to split the race up into thirds, and I didn't want to do anything too funky, too out of the ordinary in strategy. I'm still, like I said, getting a feel for how the strategy is going to be playing out for these races.
So, yeah.
I'm just trying to just not get crazy with it, and everyone else started getting crazy with it. You can see it worked out for some, didn't work out for others. So, like I said, it wouldn't have worked out for me, but it's literally a coin flip on what's going to happen there at the end and if the caution will come out or not. But thankfully, Scott had a hell of a save there to keep us racing green, because, I mean, he could have just looped it and said, well, he wrecked me, and threw on new tires and probably could have finished top seven. So,
yep.
To save the car, knowing he could have just throttled up and looped it and threw on new tires. So,
yeah. So what do you think turn four, I mean, it doesn't matter who answers this one first. What do you think, why is turn four so difficult at Richmond?
Honestly, in these cars, every corner feels the same. It's just a matter of throttle control.
Yeah.
If you go 50% throttle versus 60, you're looping at 50%, you're under driving. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's very technical with these cars to get the line right.
Yep.
And be laying down the fastest laps. The turn four, you just get the throttle so much earlier, and you're still turning the car.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that wide sweep after the wall, so they have maximum speed. You're getting in the throttle a little bit earlier than what you're used to on a short track. So you're pretty much just chasing the car all the way up and still trying to take care of that right rear. And it's fun. It was fun, but it's really hard to pass.
Mm-hmm.
When you do get under somebody, because you can't throttle up, and that dude on the outside, he can dive in the corner kind of and get that straight launch off, and you have to start from square one again and regroup and try it again.
Yep. How does your do you adjust any of your brake bias or force feedback or steering ratios during the race? Or
it just depends on the racetrack I run.
Yeah.
What I feel like, I have the steering ratios. Like in Xfinity, I had a set point what I wanted to run.
Yep.
Every single week. These cars, like I said, I probably ran two or three races before the league started, competitively with other drivers. So still learning what works and what doesn't in these cars. But I usually go lower on the. People keep it a secret, but. Don't care if people hear it or not, but
yep.
I usually go a little bit lower. I like a looser car.
And
ratio, I mean, I think Larry Mack during a broadcast would say if you fine-tune the car for the entrance of the corner, sometimes that helps the exit. And
okay, interesting.
So I go lower on brake bias, get looser in, and then it just helps the balance throughout the corner.
Makes sense.
Force feedback, I keep it low. I don't like my wheel talking back to me. So,
yep. It was funny.
I have like a G29 wheel, so
It was funny because
it doesn't register very well. So I just try to minimize it as much as possible.
Yeah, it was a couple.
Yeah, same here. I just was same going down on brake bias, put rear brake in it, and get it to turn a little better on the long run.
Yep. A couple weeks ago, I had I forget which the series, whether it was this one or the other one, but one of the drivers I was talking to, he's been racing something since he was like 3 years old, he said, whether it was a bicycle or go-karts or dirt cars. And we started talking about wheels and brakes and stuff like that. He says, I got the G29 I started with. The only thing I upgraded was my pedals. He says, I don't care about brake bias. He says, I don't want to feel in my butt what I normally feel in my feet when I'm driving. So it was really amazing that here it is. This guy is like outstanding driver. And you would think somebody like that would have $1,000 wheel, and he's got a G29. He goes, doesn't matter. He goes, if you know how to drive, you know how to drive, and you can drive on any wheel. So it's just interesting when I started asking about, you know, the brake biases and such. So, Bo, you said you guys have raced in different leagues. When and what leagues did you guys race in, and how did you guys meet together?
Well, we had a mutual friend of ours that I raced on a team in a league with. And then brought the Daniel. And Daniel brought Seth and I together on a team together in Xfinity. We used to run a league called SRN, and I ran there for 4 or 5 seasons. And in between Xfinity and trucks and stuff like that. And then, well, Seth, you met Justin, and then you transitioned over to Justin's Xfinity team. And in the same time, Justin was looking for somebody to running his truck series team, so then I came over to run the trucks, and then we've always raced together and practiced together since then.
Oh, that's cool.
I like to chase stuff, so he's a good qualifier. Qualifier is not my best thing, so I like to find him hot lapping.
Yeah, never has been your strong suit.
Unless it's a plate track. I can qualify a plate track, but I don't know what it is.
But I taught you the line.
Oh, that's good.
That? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other secret I will not give out.
Ah, okay. So how did you guys come across Rolling Thunder Racing? Where did you find it, in the ads or scrolling through iRacing leagues? Or what was that story about?
So like Mo was saying, Justin owned a team in XRN called JW Racing, and we both were part of it. And he decided to leave SRN and to focus on creating this league. And
cool.
He had a vision. And initially, it sounded really appealing. And as it gained momentum, and we talked about it more and more, I felt like it was an opportunity I didn't want to pass up, so registered for it. I know a lot of some of the JW guys came over as well.
Uh-huh.
And I know they're all really good and respectful racers, so I knew it was going to, we had a good strong foundation for the league.
Sounds like
so,
it.
Yeah, so it was appealing to come, and I like how the first 5 races have been with, or 4 or 5 races? 4. Ugh, I lost count. Hey, 5 races, yeah.
And 5 different winners.
Yeah. And honestly, how it's going, I could see 10 more different winners with the level
wow.
of the field, the competitiveness. So, I mean, what, our points leader doesn't even have a winner. I think he's second in points now, but I mean, he doesn't even have a win. So I'm sitting 5th without a win. I feel like I could have the win if this one thing was different here and there. I didn't make mistakes, but
yep.
just makes you push a little bit more and get a little bit better to get up there. Because just like an SRN, that was a competitive league too, and that really trained me a lot and helped me grow. That league, I think we had a 20-race season. We had 20 different winners. So,
oh wow,
you can't make a mistake.
No,
and,
sounds
and
like
that,
it.
That league has really prepared me for this league to know what to do, where not to make mistakes. And
yep.
there's one mistake, you're losing 5 spots, and then you get caught up in a wreck. So,
yep.
Well, you and I had already started playing around with these cars a little bit. You remember, we were just like, Dean and a couple other guys, like, we're like, oh, is this Gen 4 stuff takes off? You know, what? This might be fun. And then Justin comes out and, you know, kind of announced what he'd been doing behind the scenes with creating this league. So it was a pretty good opportunity to really broadcast this car, what iRacing's put into it.
Cool. So,
yeah, can you imagine? Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Seth.
So the inadvertent ARCA mod. So could you imagine when that update came out and then you had an ARCA league that night? You got no scars for the league race, and all of a sudden you have, 200, 300 more horsepower?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That'd be wild.
Yeah. I love the Xfinity and the ARCA cars. I mean, Gen 7 is the most popular on iRacing, probably because there's so many casual drivers. I don't mind the car. I just think it's too easy to drive. And then when I get in the Xfinity or the 87s, I always say driving Xfinity or the 87 is like you're 16 years old or 15. You just got your learner's permit, and you're taking out your grandpa's 1987 or 95 Pontiac Bonneville that's too big for you to drive, and you don't know how to stop. It's like riding on the edge the whole time.
Yeah, and for those of us that actually grew up driving those 87 Monte Carlos, we...
Yep. So, Bo, when did you get into racing? Let's talk about, like, real racing and then get into the sim racing.
Like iRacing or real racing?
Real racing.
Well, so... I told you I grew up there just outside of Watkins Glen.
Yep.
And, you know, grew up kind of going to the races. I actually went to the first race they had there in 86 that Tim Richmond won. And I was there in turn one as a six-year-old kid. And I don't know, from there I just kind of fell in love with cars, fell in love with racing. And that was always my goal, was to get out of New York and come down here. So 20 years ago when we moved down here, I was fortunate enough to get around, if you know who Chuck Bowen is, Busch Series champion, former Cup driver. I got around him and his brother, and they started teaching me, which kind of helped me get my foot in the door
in
the racing industry. And then from there, went on to work with Johnny Davis and a few really good older retired drivers now in the Busch Series, and then went up to Nextel Cup for a little bit. For a few years.
Oh, what'd you do in the Nextel Cup?
So, primarily built cars at the shop, and then traveled on the weekends, used to, you know, whatever changes we made during practice, used to work on them through tech, anything you need to be tech with the engine, taking them apart, build cars. We need to be done, mechanical, body, paint, we could do all that stuff, finish fab work.
Oh, wow.
And then go over and set them up, and then on the weekends, I used to do picker stuff. So I was a rear changer, and if not, I would help catch can fuel, and I would go, might be in the Busch garage, Busch East garage, and then go over to Cup garage and help a lot of the small teams.
Wow, that's fascinating. So probably some really good stories you could tell about all the drivers, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm very fortunate, really blessed to really, you know, meet and spend time with a lot of great drivers.
Oh, that's cool.
Not to start name dropping, but, like, you know, spend time with James Hilton and, you know, sit there and have dinner with Greg Sachs and him talking about making Days of Thunder. And, you know, stories like talking with Jeff Bodine because he's from New York, and just different guys I worked with, you know, Derek Cope and Morgan Shepherd, and, like, going to dinner with Morgan and, walking through the garage area, you know, sitting in a driver's meeting with, you know, Chad Knaus and all those guys, and they don't treat you any different.
Oh,
they're all there to do the same thing, you know.
That's awesome. It wasn't this year. It was last year at Watkins Glen. My son got his press credentials. He shoots for a couple different NASCAR magazines. He's shooting for Podium Finish, and then he's gone down to Texas the last 2 years to do the truck series for, I forget who it is, but they've got like 2/3 of the truck teams. They are the, you know, official quote unquote photographers for him. So, and I also had pit passes, but I had to pay for my pit passes. He just got in to do everything. So I see him sitting on pit road. No, he's outside the media center. And I had, the car I brought with me I wanted to get signed was when Truex won the Chicago, or the Coke 600 back, I think, in 2019. I had that car with me. And so I knew he wasn't going to do it because he said we're not allowed to do that. I was just busting his chops. And I said, yo, Junior, come over here. He comes over and goes, what do you want? I said, go get Truex to sign this car. No, I can't do that. I got to go meet Richard Petty or something like that, he said. I said, and he starts giving me that snarky look. I said, we're 200 miles from home, and it's a long walk by yourself. So just busting his chops. So he's got some of the same stories just being around the drivers. And he said the same thing. He goes, just about all of them except for some of the cocky ones, which even he wouldn't name, but I could guess pretty easily. He said it's like a big family, and they see the new photographer come up, take him under this wing and everything. So it definitely sounds like the same type of stories that my son is telling, and it's a blessing to be able to have that opportunity.
Well, I think that's why I like this league with Gen 4 cars, because I actually worked on those cars and built them and went to the track with them.
So that is so cool.
Like to be, you know, be racing in an iRacing, like kind of know the ins and outs of it. Yeah, I know we're on fixed setup, so there's little tweaks we could probably make, but unfortunately that's fixed setups, you know?
Right. Cool. So, Seth, what's your racing story?
Man, you haven't let me make the follow up Bose stories?
Sure, why not? Hey, it can't be.
Not as cool as Bose, but pretty much what got me into racing, I forget who last week said they were flipping two channels and on the podcast last week and said that's when they started watching it. Same thing with me. It was actually the 2004 Daytona 500. Obviously, you can probably guess who my favorite driver was after that race. But I was just flipping through channels, and what got me was Michael Waltrip flipping. I was in fourth grade, so I don't know how old I would have been, like 10, 9, 10. Saw a car flip. I was like, wow, that's cool. watched the race and saw Junior win. I actually remember watching him get out of the car.
Yeah.
And celebrate. And I'm thinking this is why I got into this sport, because of the excitement of that win.
Yeah.
And I, ever since then, I've pretty much watched every weekend. Obviously, some races I can't watch, and there's a couple years I didn't watch, but outside of that, I'm watching every week, and I can probably ace NASCAR trivia after 2004. and it's pretty cool to see how involved, and I was, like I said, I was a diehard Junior fan through and through.
Wow.
From the lows in 2005, 2009, 2010 through the highs of 2014, 2004. And now I just really don't. I watch it every week because I'm a race fan.
Yeah.
So I have a favorite driver, because once you have that diehard fandom for somebody and you can't root for them anymore and there's like a changing of the guard.
Yes.
It's hard. It's hard to put that commitment in somebody else.
But, oh, sure.
Just like any other sport, you have the change in dynasties and Steelers fan, and 2011 they won the championship, and I kind of left them on top. They traded people away, and it wasn't the same core group, and you know, I just got out of it. So
no, I hear
just
you.
Watch for the. I'm a fan of most sports now.
Yeah,
I mean, I do root for the Guardians every year, but it's also the same thing, you know. It's,
Yeah,
core players. So
yeah, I definitely know that feeling, because especially my son, he was a big Carl Edwards fan. Really, really liked Carl Edwards a lot. Got his autograph a couple times and such. And then when he retired, he's like, he was probably, he's 22 now, so probably in mid to late teens. He's like, Dad, who are we going to root for? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, it just got to the point a couple of years ago when I got to know all the, in the Cup Series and most of Xfinity, the numbers and what, and the match and the drivers. And then it was a silly season where everybody changed teams. And I said, oh, screw this. I'm just going to go back and, all right, that's number 24. You know, take me like, you know, you got Byron and Bowman and so many names that sound the same. So it can be a little tricky. So I said, what about this Truex guy? He says, who? I said, this guy, Martin Truex Jr., small team, and they're not even in North Carolina. Go, yeah, that's okay. Let's go for root for the underdog. But it's like you said, the changing of the guard. And it's really starting to show, because if you looked at who made the playoffs this year, like the round of eight, there was 50-50 old guard and new guard. And that has been a long time since that's happened. So it's definitely the tides are changing. And like you said, you're still a fan of the sport, but it's hard to put all your marbles into one basket because your guy's not around anymore, or you know he's reaching senior citizen status at the age of 40 in racing.
Go ahead, finish that.
It's just when you have that die hard fandom for somebody, you don't have that rush,
right,
when your driver's about to win the race. Like, anything can go wrong, and as a junior fan, it usually went wrong, right?
So, yep.
When he did win, it was like I was on cloud nine for a month.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah, it's the same way when Truex won his first championship. I'm like, it felt like Christmas Day, you know, because it was so cool. So, Seth, did you do any real racing?
Nope, just iRacing.
Ah, okay.
I mean, you know, occasional go-kart track where...
Well, that counts.
I treated it like I was racing for my life, but yeah, from that, just yeah, iRacing.
First time I actually raced a car was in Columbus, Ohio. They had I don't know if they were electric. I think they were gas cars, but there was like a really fancy, they weren't go-karts. They looked more like little Formula One cars or street cars or something like that. And my cousin and I, we had just gotten done touring the Budweiser brewery. And okay, you go through and they give you two beers per tour, but we did like four tours. So then we end up at this racetrack thing and the guy said, you haven't been drinking, have you? No, not us. So we weren't too buzzed, but we had a pretty good time out on that track. So that's the first time I raced, and then didn't touch another thing until the shopping malls around here started showing up with those the electric cars they have now. And the first time I actually did what I would call serious anything was over at Lime Rock Park this Wednesday. They gave our group that works there 4 hours on the autocross track. And we had one of the Skip Barber Racing School cars, and I looked at it, I go, oh, standard? And the guy goes, what, you can't drive standard? And I said, I haven't driven standard in 20 years, and the other guys are here in their Audis, in their Mustangs, BMWs, and Corvettes. Is it okay if I take my Tacoma out on the track? And the guy goes, yeah, go ahead. So... And even then, I still wouldn't call that real racing, but I was driving my Tacoma around the autocross track, and it was fun. So that's about the most I've ever done. So, what's next? No, go ahead.
And that's experience right there, too, knowing the risks.
Oh, yeah, embarrassing yourself in front of a bunch of real car guys.
That reserve. So I'd just be like, whatever, let's go. And then I find nose into the tire barriers and have a big bill on my hand.
No, I kept it clean because I know the limits of my truck. I can't do it like a regular car. So where these guys might have been going, I don't know, 55 around the turns, I was doing like 35. It still felt like 135. And then when I hear the tires squeak a little bit, I go, I got to back off. But I had so much fun. I'm actually in the market for a used Miata or something like that because they have a league over there. And I think it's once a week or once every couple weeks. And we get a huge discount being employees over there. So I want to race. I really do want to do this, even at my advanced age. So it's something that gets under your skin and you just... Like you said, it's kind of like a lifestyle, and it's just so much fun. So
yeah, the odds are half as fun as they are racing on iRacing, man.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be one hell of a time.
Oh, man, they're incredible. Because I know how to race a Miata on Lime Rock because I've driven Lime Rock in other vehicles very slowly in a parade lap, and I drive the Miatas and the MX-5s on that track. It's just such a great track. So you said you guys have been iRacing for a while. When did you find iRacing? And did you do the Xbox or controller games prior to that?
So for those of us that are a little bit older, so my first introduction to race gaming was like the Daytona game on the original Nintendo, the Days of Thunder game.
Yep.
And then I graduated up to the PS1 and the PS2 for like, you know, NASCAR 96, 98, 02, 03. And then from there, I really took a break from it. And what's interesting, you know, working in the garage here and everything, there was this big buzz when, you know, Junior started talking about this iRacing thing.
Okay.
And a couple of guys I worked with kind of got into it when it first launched, you know, in 2008. I just never did anything with it. I just kind of kept putting it off. It was just like one of them back of the head things. And then, I don't know, you know, when you have kids, you're so busy with them when they're little. And then I was getting ready to turn 40. And COVID hit. My wife's like, well, we can't really do anything. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna start doing this iRacing thing. I've been wanting to do it for, you know, 12 years now. And, you know, so that's kind of how I got started. And then in the meantime, one of the guys, well, Seth knows him, David Duke, that we do a bunch of other racing stuff, money leagues and stuff with. We all used to race in SRN together. So Dave and I used to work together on a couple actual, you know, Busch Series teams, and he was official in the Busch Series, and I was still working for teams.
Yep.
We're friends on Facebook, and Dave went, hey, I'm looking at maybe doing some leagues on iRacing. We've been in a couple official races. Have you thought about getting into a league? And then that's how all that started.
I know David Duke. He was a guest on my show here, I think, about a year ago.
Okay. So you know Dave. Yep.
Yep. He's a handful, that guy. He's like, he's full of gumption.
Yeah, he's a trip. Can you imagine him and I used to like sleep in motel rooms together and travel all over the place?
And you didn't get arrested? Wow. So you started out on the console games, and then basically COVID's what got you into iRacing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
just
cool.
Kind of, you know, something else to do. And I was kind of itching. I was going back and forth. I thought about maybe building a real race car. And then, you know, I was joking with my wife. I'm like, but, you know, like the computer and the screens, like we can get started for probably less than a set of tires.
Easily. Oh, man. Easily. So, Seth, when did you start iRacing?
Started iRacing around COVID, to be honest with you.
Ah.
I feel like COVID was a big business maker for iRacing.
Oh yeah.
I got the stimmy check and purchased a computer from, I think, FEG, FAG, Jeff Scott. And been using that computer ever since. You know, it's not a crazy setup like everyone else has. Like, I've been thinking about getting a camera for the onboard, but I don't know how much it would move with my desk when I have to crank on the wheel.
Yep. Now, so, what'd you do before iRacing? Any of the console games or nothing?
Yeah, I did NASCAR Thunder 2003 on GameCube.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for a while, you know, when I was younger, and it was fun. You know, the NASCAR games up through the Utechnics or what's I forget who the company was, but like Inside Line and stuff. But
yeah,
I remember NASCAR 09 is where I really gained momentum with racing. That NASCAR 09 online was phenomenal. The restrictor plate racing still to this day is the best restrictor plate racing I've done. It was so fun.
Yeah.
You had speed compo and no caution, and you ran 19 laps a day. You just ran through 10 races a night with your buddies. That was the best time. And then, you know, ran a couple of points Points Leagues there, and then the new publisher came. Games just weren't the same, you know. You had a big old bubble, and the racing was kind of arcadey, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And I kind of just fizzled out of it, and I always wanted to do iRacing. It just, you know, it was out of the reach financially, but then finally started making a career of myself and had the money to do so. Also, thank you, government, for the stimmy check. But, but then decided to pull the trigger and been racing since. I mean, I started through that 2000, but I was kind of off and on. You know, you get that huge rush there for the first couple months, and you kind of burn yourself out.
Yes.
And I kind of got tired of racing officials and finally started hopping around leagues trying to find something that was right, because I'd rather race around the same people, knowing what you can get away with, what you can't. And if someone dumps you, there's repercussions to that, you know?
Exactly.
And officials, someone dumps you, they go on about their day.
Yeah.
And they really don't care. So it's nice to have that in a league, knowing you're racing the same core group of guys, so you're going to race more successfully. So
yes, you do.
I think it's better racing, and I've learned a lot, just more. I've learned more in league racing than I have any time in officials. So.
Oh, definitely. Definitely the same thing here. I think I said, I've been iRacing, 7-8 years now. My son has been doing it almost 10 years. And the way I got into it was he started out by borrowing either mine or my wife's laptop. And he had the $50 wheel and pedal set that you clamp onto the dining room table. I go, what are you doing? He goes, I'm doing iRacing, Dad. He's like 12 years old or something. And he goes, really? I said, what's that? And he started showing me. And all of a sudden, he starts winning races, you know, official races and stuff. So then I get this email from iRacing that my account has been suspended for 30 days. And so I said, Sam, what's this with my iRacing account? I thought you're using your own name. He goes, well, I had to use your credit card in your name because you got to be 13 to be on it or whatever the thing was. And he was a year younger. So I'm like, oh, so, I guess since I'm suspended for 30 days, when we go back on, I'm going to be driving. He said, what do you mean? So we started building a rig down here in the basement, and I used to do home brewing. So I took part of my brewery, and that's where my racing rig room is now. And built a little platform, and we're still sitting on the floor, but we had this wooden desk where we put the laptop screen or the laptop. Yeah. So then I bought an open wheel, rig with the seat and the stand for the wheel and stuff, but we were still sitting on the floor, and I'm like, you know, I had back surgery a while back. This is not too much fun. So then we built the platform, then we got the bigger screen, and then we got the better wheel and the better, I mean, we upgraded only the pedals. We went from a G27 to G29, and it just, like I said, it just catches on fire. And same thing, you race like crazy for a couple of months, and then you quit. Sam got into it so much when we set the rig up down here during school vacation. Well, he's homeschooled, and he'd be racing during the summertime 8-12 hours a day. And I said, what are you doing? He goes, racing. He goes, how many races you do today? He goes, I've done about 15 races today. Then all of a sudden, he would stop for 3 months. So, and then he'd get back into it and doing the leagues and such like that. That's all I do is leagues. I'll still jump on during the wintertime and do the pickup cup and carburetor cup, because that's a quick half hour in and out. But I don't think I've done an official in about 3 or 4 years. It's just so much more fun doing leagues.
Yeah, and with officials now, like, my iRating, it's right there when I'm in the tier one every official.
Yes.
And those guys, man, I think I've raced with Eberhard a couple times in those officials, and they can just hop right in and know their line and be quick. And I have to practice. And
oh, me too.
For officials, I really don't have time to practice for that week. And I just focus my time on the leagues. And by the time the league's season's over, like, you put so much time into it, and you put especially when you're coming to the end of the season and you're close in points to the championship, and you just put countless hours in just to get the edge.
Yes.
And then once that season's over, man, I'm out for a couple months.
Oh, I don't blame you, because you get in a, especially not so much the Gen 7 car, but the like talk the other cars or even the trucks. And if you're in a tight race and it's a like a half length or a full length race, and you're banging and jostling for position, you're exhausted at the end of the race. I literally am so tired. I just go upstairs and go to bed after, you know, like a 2 hour race where you're really grinding gears at everybody. It's exhausting.
And I don't think sometimes when people, they think, oh, it's just a video game. And
yeah.
I'm like, if you've never actually sat and run 230 laps at Richmond, when you're using both your feet and legs and your hands, and, you know, you're constantly on the wheel, especially when you get, you know, some of these 100-lap green flag runs like we had at Atlanta.
Yeah.
And Atlanta's a very technical track, the old surface. You know, like,
yes.
A couple of us were joking after the race. It's like, I got to go change my T-shirt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, especially if you don't have good air conditioning like I don't, and I'm racing in the summer, and you can't go and grab a beer in the middle of the race like you can when you're watching it. That's a big consideration, too.
Yeah, for sure.
So, strategies for Michigan. Who wants to go first? What are you hoping to get out of Michigan, and how are you prepping for it?
I think it's Legacy Michigan, so...
Yes, it is.
I have never ran that track, so I'll definitely be putting them in practice later this week for it. I don't even know how it drives. I don't know if it's anywhere near what new Michigan is. I guess we'll find out. Most of these tracks, not going to for the first time, but, you know, going to for the first time in these cars. So
yeah,
I'm pretty much starting from a blank slate each track we go to, so...
Yeah,
it's fun to adapt and I have my hopes there though. Just Michigan in general, I've always loved that track.
Yep.
And any video game I played, it's high speed and you're on the edge. And I'm sure these cars are just going to be hanging on the right rear all the way through the corner. So whoever can be on the edge the most and have that more throttle time through the corners and coming off and get to the brave enough to get to the gas sooner than everyone else, I think those will be the cars to beat. So
cool.
I mean, this track races, the old Michigan Legacy is really similar to Fontana. It races a lot like Fontana. So it's really finding that groove. One, you know, it's a driver's track. It's not just follow the leader, especially with this car. So it's finding what groove works for you. I think some guys probably go to the bottom. You might have some guys riding the wall. You could probably run the middle. I think that the key with this car there and with our league is because you're on that 75% fuel load.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference on the weight balance of this car. And I know, Seth, you could tell from driving this thing, like, when you come up off the corner, I mean, you can feel. iRacing did a really good job of, you can feel that nose pick. And it kind of leaned this car back on the right rear. Yeah, and I have run Xfinity for, what, 3 seasons of SRN. That's all I ran. And I've developed some habits, that's for sure. And where I'm used to getting the throttle in Xfinity, it's different in these cars. And like I said, just learning that limit. And I just have the bad habit of throwing up too soon, too hard, and breaking loose. Like, I did that at Atlanta on the last lap and collected a couple of drivers. And because I snapped it sideways, bounced off the wall, and they bounced off.
Yeah, Michigan
broke loose behind me. So.
I find Michigan to be another track that's tricky coming out of turn 4, at least for me.
Well, that's because you look at it and you're looking down to the trial oval and you're like, yeah, I can get flat-footed and go. And then you realize you can't really do that off of there.
Yep. How do you find the pit approach at Michigan? Because that's one of the ones I find is a little bit more tricky to find pit road easy.
Yeah, it's just finding that right marker. You know, everybody has their, you know, their own visual markers, whether it's, you know, spots on the wall or, you know, certain, you know, signage.
Yep.
I don't find the transition there that bad. I mean, if it really just depends on your entry, on kind of, there's that kind of little divot there as you're coming in.
Yes.
And it's kind of finding that balance of how much speed you can carry, where you downshift versus, you know, trying to sell it in there. And of course this car locks up real easy. I think that's one of the driver's preferences, and you have enough approach, you can definitely get down to speed. It's not like Richmond where it's very easy to get a speeding penalty on entry.
Right.
When you're trying to get off the track.
Yep. What I do is I have an overlay on my screen. It's an outline of the track, and during practicing during the week, one of my things is show you my experience in racing. If I'm on an oval and I'm not paying attention, I couldn't tell you if I'm in turn one or turn three half the time. So that's why I got to look for the visuals, because normally I'm just like, okay, I'm going to drive. And I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to know where pit road is. So what I do is I practice different pit approaches, and then I take a little piece of tape and put it right on the map on the screen, which is, you know, down on the dashboard out of the way. That, and I'm watching my car on that map come around, and when I start seeing that tape show up, that's when I know I got to start prepping to get into pit road, and that's made a huge difference for me. That's one of my tricks that I do on a lot of the tracks.
Yeah, I've got a couple things. I mean, I've got a setup where, you know, I get counted down when I come in, and of course it beeps in my ear to tell me if I'm at the right speed.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Little visual things there.
Yeah. That's cool. Bo, what are your plans for Michigan this week?
Honestly, I think I'm just going to race the racetrack.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be some guys that are going to try to go hard at the beginning, see what happens with tire wear. And I mean, that's kind of what I did at Atlanta. My goal is to be, you know, qualify top 10. And like, you know, Seth said earlier, you know, you're just trying to, it's a fine line between where you want to start, because you're either trying to make up positions or you can kind of just go and get out there and get ahead, you know?
Yep. Well, that makes perfect sense to me. And I don't have any plans for, I forget where we were off this week. Not sure where we're going to be Sunday, but I'll probably start practicing Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning for Sunday night's race. And I kind of just make my final plans based on where I qualify. If I qualify up front, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. I'm going to get run over. If I qualify in the back, I'm like, okay, I'm going to wait for everybody else to make a mistake. Because I just wait for the right moments. And like I said, still learning the driving craft and managing tires and all that, especially after, you know, doing leagues seriously for 4 or 5 years. If I finish in the top 10, I'm happy. If I finish in the top 5, I feel like either somebody quit the race on the last lap or I cheated. So just like being out there doing the racing, and like you said, it's a camaraderie. It's like a brotherhood, and it's people that chances are you'll never meet them. Because one series that I ran for 3 seasons, we had a guy up in Maine, and then one of our admins was over in Ireland, and it's just so cool. My wife comes home from work, and I'm talking on Discord, getting ready for our admin meeting. She goes, who are you talking to? I go, oh, that's Al. He goes, where is he? I go, he's in Ireland. He says, you're talking to somebody on the iPad in Ireland? I go, yeah, it's like a cell phone. He's like, it's just so cool. There's quite a bit going on there. Well, you guys are welcome to hang out for the rest of the broadcast. I've pretty much got all my information and questions answered. Oh, before we go, something I started recently. Bo, we'll start with you. Do you have any sponsors or people you want to thank in the league or supporters or family that puts up with you disappearing on Sunday nights for a couple hours?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, first off, thanks to Justin. I mean, anybody that's ever done anything league racing, in the time, the money, the effort that goes into, you know, not just putting a league together, but, you know, rule books and rules and building races and everything. You know, thank you to our admins. I haven't had a chance to meet a lot of them, but like Rob Yost, you know, Rob came over from SRN. He races in SRN, but he's a really good admin. He does a good job of that part. You know, the broadcast team, they're phenomenal. Maybe they might say my name right, but I don't care. It's just funny.
Yeah.
Love those guys. Stefani. And I feel like I'm an Italian spaghetti sauce, Stefani. But, you know, all those guys do such a great job, and all the drivers in the league are great. A couple of the practice sessions we've thrown up and raced with everybody, like everybody's kind of helped each other or whatever. And
yep.
We got to get Seth to get off the paddle shifters, though. You need a real shifter. But, sponsor-wise, I have to thank my kids because it's actually we have a beekeeping business.
Oh, no kidding!
That we do part time, so that's our sponsorship on the car. So it makes my two boys excited; they get to see the car going around. And
oh, that's cool.
Obviously, my wife, because she has to put up with me, you know, being gone. And if a race doesn't go well, well, you know what happens when you come home.
Yep.
And you're mad.
Yep.
You know, and my parents, cause my parents do stream the races. They love to watch it.
Oh, that is so cool.
You know, so my mom and stepdad, they like to watch it. My in-laws will catch it every once in a while, and
yeah,
they just can't believe that there's so many people from like around the country and the world all in this one race.
Oh, it's so cool, you know? Isn't it?
So, yeah, and your podcast and everybody else that's involved with that. I mean, I appreciate you bringing us on
sure.
And give us the time to have some fun, because it takes a lot to do all this.
Yep. It takes me probably about 90 minutes to put this podcast together and the one for Midwest, because like we were talking earlier before we went on, they have four leagues. So that's about a 2.5 to 3 hour process just to get everything together to go on, and then you're on for an hour, and then there's not a lot of post editing that goes on, but just downloading and uploading probably for this podcast, and the other one takes about another 1.5 to 2 hours. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of input running a league. I did it for 3 seasons, 3 leagues, and between broadcasting and weekly prizes and prize funds and stuff like that, it was a $300 to $400 a month expense. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of time to put in, and then keeping everybody's interest. Anybody can put up a league, but if you're not generating weekly interest and having an active Discord or social media, it's not going to last long. So that's the key to it there. Seth, what about you? Anybody you want to thank?
Yeah, first off, Sean Griffin. He sponsored my car with Silverback, his tax solutions, his company that he created and owns. And he actually owned SRN up until last year. So it was really cool to have the owner of a previous league come on board, be a sponsor of mine for this. And,
yeah,
and
that's cool.
Through this season. So
yep.
I'm really appreciative of that. And tax season is coming up, so I want to start pushing harder to get people to buy Silverback tax solutions instead of the generic TurboTax, Tax Slayer.
Yeah.
Those tax sites. So
yep.
I'll be using them this year too. So
very good.
And then like I said, he supports me. And I haven't put the performance up that I've been wanting to for him. So I need to practice more to get him some more airtime up front and hopefully get him a couple, get him included in some more interviews, representing me.
Cool.
So thanks, Sean. Second off, Justin, Mr. DSC owner. He ran a tight ship and held people accountable and no excuses. So I do miss that aspect of it, but I am very appreciative of the league he's created, and it's been fun thus far. He's got a good group of guys to race with, and kind of like let off, picked up right where I left off in the other league with the competitiveness, and you have to fight and grind to get that extra half tenth to gain a couple spots and speed charts, you know?
Yep.
So
cool.
And he puts a lot of effort into it, and you can see his passion and and organizing it comes through, and all the things he offers for the league and the drivers, like this podcast, for instance. So, which is really neat. It's really cool to be a part of this podcast. So
I appreciate
thank you,
it.
Greg, for,
oh, you're more than welcome.
Having the podcast. I've
yep.
Never been on a podcast before, so this is actually really fun. It's not an interview, it's just a conversation. So
yep, that's the...
I actually forgot that we were live for half of it.
Yep. And you crossed off all those things that I said would get edited out, right? Like.
So far, I've done pretty well. Not over yet, though.
Yes, you're exactly.
I mean, it's Halloween, so.
Yeah, you see, in regular radio, there's a delay button, which you basically everything 7 seconds. It would take me 7 seconds to hit the button to turn you off. So be careful.
All right. And then, like I said, the admins. It can be hard as an admin. I've
yep.
admin for SRN a couple times, but I needed somebody, and most of the time you're the bad guy, even if you make the
oh,
good
yeah.
call, just like a baseball umpire or a
yep.
NFL official. So
yep.
But respect to them, and obviously the broadcasters. They put on a hell of a show. They make it exciting. They talk about strategies. And
yes.
You can hear the passion come out of their voices when they broadcast the race. And last but not least, all the drivers. Thus far, everyone's been respectful. There's been a lot of competition. I respect that. There's a couple guys going to have to find another gear to catch up to them. Everhart has been the quickest guy thus far this year, from
mm-hmm.
what I've seen. So it's been humbling. Racing him, Scott, Dylan, and then... My teammate Jacob Manning, he's been up front trying to lead the team and just had some misfortunate events. So I'm the number one guy thus far. So Jacob Manning, if you're listening, you better step it up.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a word on broadcasting. It is a lot different than doing a podcast. A podcast, you know, you got the show all laid out. You did all your prep work. I help do commentary in the Midwest Motorsports Truck Series on Friday nights. And number one, they operate on Central Time, so it's 10 o'clock at night after, you know, let's say I've been out mowing and planting all day long and come in and I'm tired. I'm like, oh, I can't have 2 beers now because I'll fall asleep because I got to help do commentary on the truck race. And it's a completely different world. There's no script. The script is happening right in front of you, and you've got to react quick, or you got to have your standard questions like, "Hey, when do you think they're gonna?" What the pit? You're talking to the other broadcaster. You know, the same stuff every week. When do you think they're gonna take fuel? Asking each other what your strategy is based on that, and there's a lot of time to fill in with just. Small talk before something happens on the track. So yeah, kudos to all the broadcasters because it is a monumental task. And the guy that does it for us, he uses the SDK equipment. He's trying to train me to do it. And there's all these blinking lights all over your screen. I'm like, whoa, that's going to take me a lot longer to learn how to do that. And we're spread out all over the country. And there's I think 4 of us involved in the broadcast. And we're in like, I think 3 or 4 different states, hundreds of miles away. So, and again, it's like you're watching the race and there's all these people from all over the states. And then you've got people behind the scenes doing the broadcasting. You know, your announcers are 500-600 miles away. So it's an interesting platform. This is the Burn 'Em Down podcast. And this is the driver spotlight. Seth Reed, driver number 51, finished P3 at Richmond. We've been talking to him for the last hour and 10 minutes about strategy for Richmond, racing history, and what's going to come on this weekend at the Legacy Track at Michigan, 104 laps, and Bo Tiffany, who finished in P6 at Richmond. He drives car number 35. Guys, thank you so much. This has been one of the one of the best driver segments so far. We talked a lot of ground, and we talked for a long time, so thanks very much. And thank you for being on the podcast. It's you guys that make the show. I provide the platform and just try to steer it and keep it flowing. So thanks a lot, guys. And if you're going to hang out, please do. If you got to go, have a good night, but thank you very much for being guest tonight. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your time. Appreciate you. Well, yeah, thanks, Greg, for your time. I plan on staying for the rest of it. That'd be fun to do. But
yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to hang out.
All right.
My kids are out trick-or-treating, so.
You're just waiting for the candy.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, let's take a look at Richmond. The winner for this week was Dylan C. Jones. And he's the one that started in P2, and he led 62 laps at Richmond. So strong performance there. Congratulations, Dylan C. Jones, the winner at Richmond this week. And take a look at the review of the race. Dylan finished P1. He drives car number 3. P2 goes to Michael Larch. He had 2.910 seconds behind Dylan. He drives car number 2 and finished 2. Seth Reed, a guest tonight, the driver of car number 51, finished 3.57 seconds off the lead for P3, rounding out the podium. Matthew Robinson, car number 34, 4.47 seconds off the pace, finished in P4. And as we were talking earlier, hard to pronounce names. I was always saying Jordan Berube, and he corrected me last week when he was on. He says it's Berube. So, Jordan, we'll get your name right from now on. You finished in P5, driving car number 22, 11 seconds off the pace. Bo Tiffany, our other guest tonight, driver car number 35, finished in P6. Daniel Eberhard, third. That name has come up on every episode so far as being a tough driver to catch. Daniel drives the number 90 car. He finished P7. Scott Crump in car number 11 came in P8. Jason D. Maines finished in 9th in car P12. And rounding out the top 10 this week, Ryan M. Johnson. He drives car number 38, and he finished in P10. After 5 weeks, I know the screen here says, oh, this is week 4 points. I'm usually saying like week 5. It's week 5 points. The standings this week, Daniel Eberhard, third. He is in first place. He has 143 points. 5 weeks, 5 races, 5 different drivers. P2 this week was Colin Weatherholt. He was on the show a couple weeks ago. He has 141 points, only 2 points off the pace. P3 is Jared Mogard. He has won a race. He's got 140 points. He's 3 points back. Scott Crump, he also won a race, is in P4 with 138 points, trailing Daniel by 5 points. He's tied with Dylan Jones at 138 points, who also has a win. P6 is Seth Reed with 135 points, just 8 points off the pace. Jason Maines, he's the other winner of 5 races, or won 5 weeks, 5 races, 5 winners. Say that 3 times fast. He's 12 points off the pace at P7 with 131 points. Randall Nichols in P8 with 129. Matthew Robinson in 9th with 129 points. And P10, rounding at the top 10, is Luke Smith. Bunch of guys here at 129 points. Followed by Michael Larch with 122. Ryan Johnson, P12, with 117. Jacob Manning is in P13 with 115 points. Jordan Berube is in P14 with 111 points. 15th place is Matthew Mohar with 106. Lane Doyle in 16th with 101 points. Drew Ballesteros is in P17 with 100 points. Trevor Williams right behind him with 96 points at P18. Bo Tiffany at 19th position with 94 points. Dean Gagliano is in P20 with 88 points. Joshua Suss with 84 points is in P21. Brendan Barker is in 22nd position with 82 points. 23rd position is Darwin Hansen with 62 points. William Schwendenhammer with 58 points is in P24. Sean Corcoran in P25 with 51 points, followed by Jared Haynes, John Ellis Jr., and Jason Kelly, rounding out the top positions from P1 to P28 in the Rolling Thunder Racing Series. And every race is broadcast on the Global Sim Racing Channel. And this is the Gen 4 Series. Coming up this weekend, November 5th, 104 laps at Michigan International Speedway. And as we mentioned earlier, this is the legacy trap. Your legacy trap. It's a trap for me driving the old course. And we were talking strategy on that race earlier. And again, it'll be broadcast on the Global Sim Racing Channel. Closing up for the night, this has been the Burn 'Em Down podcast. This is the week 5 wrap-up. And looking forward to next Monday and see who's going to be on the show talking racing. And we'll be wrapping up what's going on in Michigan, as well as looking forward to Rockingham. That should be an interesting race. And that's also, that's an old time track. Haven't raced that one. Used to drive by it on the way down to South Carolina to see the family. The Burn 'Em Down podcast with Greg Dreis is produced by the Sim Racing Podcast. It's available live on Twitch right now, where it will remain for 14 days before they kick us off, because I don't want to pay for server farm space. But you can catch the audio and video forever on Spotify and YouTube. And we're also on all the other major podcast platforms in audio form. Look us up on Twitch, twitch.tv/Greg Dreis, YouTube at the Sim Racing Podcast, Greg Dreis, and Spotify, real long URL. Just put in the Sim Racing Podcast. But if you're a techie, you can just type in podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/Joe6PackRacing. So that's the Burn 'Em Down podcast every Monday night at 8 p.m. during racing season. It's live, and then it's out there forever. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And, guys, once again, thanks for hanging out tonight. Great show, and hopefully we'll talk to you folks again at some point during the season. If not, have a great season, and good luck in Michigan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
Have a good night, guys. Bye.
You too. Yep, later.